Warning, do not listen to this podcast if hearing about freedom and liberty is not legal for you in your community. And if so, you should immediately move to a hipper community.
Welcome to the Freedom Fiends Podcast, a weekly web lab where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati cover the punk rockinist, hip-hopinist current events, as well as timeless universal truths about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, because there's no such thing as half-free. The Freedom Fiends Podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Freedom Fiends is proudly syndicated by Alterati.com and the Liberty Radio Network at LRN.FM.
Welcome to the Vaporsmith's Freedom Hour with Freedom Fiends, Michael W. Dean.
Broadcasting from my windowless bunker.
And Nima Vedati.
Go, go, Freedom Fiends!
Freedom Fiends in the bunker, hoes.
Hey, Nima.
Yo.
What'd it do, Michael Dean?
So, this episode is called Libertarians Don't Want to Give Kids Guns. Kids would have to earn the guns.
That's so true. They would have to acquire their guns by voluntary means. There'd be no gun welfare.
Right.
And no government bullets. No pack of 50 Winchester every month.
And before someone says that that's in bad taste because there was a school shooting 2 days ago, I came up with that title 4 days ago, so don't say too soon.
Plus, I mean, if all those kids in there had guns and knew how to use them, you think that shooting would have happened?
It would have stopped as soon as someone pulled a gun.
There you go.
Yep, yep. What do you think about kids and guns? Like, when you have kids, at what age do you think you're going to start training your kid with guns, and what limitations are you going to put on it?
I think as soon, and I haven't discussed this with my wife, so this is my fantasy, sans any kind of real decision making, but I'd like to hand him an airsoft gun as soon as he's able to play with things and teach him from the very beginning. Instead of having him shoot random things, I'm just going to teach him how to target shoot and tell him about what guns are and what they can do and how dangerous they are. And then I guess when he's older, I don't know, 8 or something, maybe take him out really shooting.
Yep. I don't think I'd start with the airsoft guns, actually. And I first shot a 22 when I was 10, and I definitely was well old enough. Boston Tea Party actually has a section in Boston's Gun Bible about this that I like. And
well, he says, don't kid-proof your guns, gun-proof your kids, I think was what it boiled down to.
Yeah, and basically he said, like, one way to do that, and he said it varies from kid to kid and how, you know, mature the kid is and smart the
right.
kid is, but...
Oh, yeah.
And what kind of anger issues?
Yeah, if he has autism, yeah. You know, heavily, you don't want to
right.
just hand him an M4
right.
or nothing.
I'm not even sure when I'd hand someone with autism a gun, but I'm not saying I never would. But
if he was like the Rain Man of like trick shooting, then yeah.
Well, one thing that Boston said was that the way to gun-proof your kids is don't make the gun something forbidden and scary that like, feels bad to even talk about. Basically, he said the way to gun-proof a kid is anytime the kid wants to play with the gun, stop what you're doing, unload the gun, hand him the gun, and have him know how to even handle an unloaded gun safely. Because otherwise, if it's like locked away somewhere, it kind of has like a dirty feeling, like, oh, I'm not allowed to look at that. You know, it's almost like...
Right. Basically, be a parent. You don't want the kid to be sneaking around your room looking for
right.
the guns. Where's the guns at, you know? Like I used to sneak around my parents' room looking for porn and weed.
Exactly.
You know?
I was just thinking of porn. It's like you don't want to treat the gun like porn.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Because then they're going to want to use it and they're going to associate it with illicit wrong things.
Yep.
Which, you know, that's more likely to lead to them doing illicit wrong things with it.
Worms.
So basically be a good parent.
Yes.
While we're on the gun tip, do you want to talk about that arrest in Canada where the little girl drew a picture of
yes.
her dad holding a gun?
Yes.
I think that's good timing for that.
Speaking of airsoft guns and guns being dirty.
Yeah, there was, I guess it's a place called Kitchener. I don't know if I'm spelling
it's
that
It's in Ontario.
Right.
It's Kitchener, Ontario.
Kitchener, yep. Ontario. Okay. So a little girl was in school. It was picture time, I guess, and she was drawing a picture. She drew a picture of a person holding a gun, and the teacher saw it and was like, hey, what's this? And she's like, it's my dad with the gun. He uses it to shoot bad guys and monsters. And apparently that scared the shit out of the real bad guys and monsters, i.e. the school officials and the police. And they arrested the dad, threw him in jail, strip searched him, didn't ever tell him what it was. Finally, they told him he was being charged with possession of a firearm before they had even searched his house. And then they searched his house and found nothing but an airsoft gun.
Yep.
Which, the first thing that came to my mind was, are guns that illegal in Canada? And I was going to look this up before the cast, but I didn't have time. I mean, is it really that bad to where you can't even own a gun in your house?
Yeah, you can sort of. It's like England, but not quite as bad. You know, it's one of those like hunting and sports shooting, and it's kind of like Australia. Like, you have to belong to a shooting organization that's approved by the government. You have to be willing to let your house be searched. You have to be an upstanding member of the community, blah, blah, blah. The thing is, though, what's the part of Canada that's above Montana and Wyoming?
Saskatchewan?
Yeah. In rural Western Canada, a lot of people ignored the turn in your guns demand a few years ago.
Ah, I see, I see. And where's Ontario? That's more in the Great Lakes region?
That's the East Coast, man. It's the East Coast.
East Coast, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
Kitchener, Ontario's like an hour from where I grew up in upstate New York. Like, it's right across Lake Erie.
Okay, okay.
Like, I used to watch TV from Ontario, broadcast TV from Ontario when I was a kid.
Oh, okay.
And to be clear, if people don't know what I mean by broadcast TV, it meant there was not a cable coming into your house. It went over
the airwaves.
The air, like a radio.
It was like Wi-Fi radio. For TV.
Yeah, and there were three channels, NBC, ABC, and CBS, and then there was the Canadian channel, and then there was like a UHF channel, which was this whole other band that was real fuzzy and looked like snow.
I remember that. Yeah, the old school TVs that looked like furniture, and they had a dial, and they had a switch that said VHF, UHF.
Yeah. You know, the remote on the TV when I was a kid was funny. It was like, it didn't have any electronics. It had, like, you push one button on it, and it had a little chime. And the TV had a microphone that would pick up the chime and change to the next channel.
No way.
Yep, it was a mechanical remote.
That's so dope. And it picked up whatever tone the chime was?
Yeah, there were two chimes and two buttons. One was for volume and one was for channel.
Okay. So basically like a cooler version of the clapper. Could you have a little tuning fork and use that instead if you lost your remote?
Maybe. Maybe. I tried singing different things to it and it didn't work. And I had pretty good pitch. So it wasn't just pitch. It was tone also. But it actually wasn't built in the TV. It was like we bought a set-top thing. Actually, we didn't even buy it. When we bought the Oriental Bazaar from that Jordanian guy named Halaby, he had it and it came with the apartment that was above the store. So
Okay.
It was Middle Eastern
magic,
economics, and technology. Yeah.
It was like rubbing the lamp to change the channel.
Well, he actually did like import-export stuff, so he probably got them before anybody.
I wish for a Girls Gone Wild commercial. Poof.
He could call up his 72 virgins on the TV.
But anyway, back to this guns in Canada thing. The thing that really struck me, too, was that question was never even asked or brought up by the article, which I guess is the mainstream paper there in Kitchener. It's called The Record. And they never explained that, hey, guns are illegal or, you know, oh my God, a gun. They just sort of tell it straight down the middle, which I guess is okay. But I feel like, what kind of world do we live in where the context isn't there that, hey, somebody was thrown in jail and strip searched because he might have a piece of metal in his house? I mean, that doesn't strike you as like, what? Why? Why would the police do that kind of thing? And the guy doesn't even stand up for himself. And maybe this is why. I mean, he says it's kind of unwarranted.
Unwarranted, meaning they didn't have a warrant.
Literally, yeah. But I don't know, maybe it's just because, maybe Canada's more centrally planned than I thought. The dad was like 26 years old, and he was like a life issues counselor. And he has a quote where he says, like, I'm a certified personal responsibility worker. And I'm like, what the hell is that? I don't even know what you're talking about.
Like, it's a job description that only exists in a centrally planned socialist
exactly.
paradise.
Exactly, and that's what brings to my mind. It's like, oh, I'm such and such functionary for the state. I can't believe they would think I would even own a gun. Oh, my God. Man. Hey, buddy, I can't believe you thought I owned a gun. What the fuck?
I'm a psychiatrist in charge of reprogramming errant thought.
Yeah, pretty much. Yep. So I guess what I have to say is, God, Canada is square, man.
Yeah, our libertarian friend David C., who helped with the fiend sourcing of the YouTube stuff, really got a kick out of that article. I posted it on his Facebook, and he was like, oh my God, You know, it's kind of funny. Whenever he posts libertarian stuff on YouTube or Facebook, inevitably some guy's like, yeah, as Americans, we need to watch out for this stuff. And then he's like, well, actually, I'm Canadian. Anarchy knows no bounds. And then the people like either go away or get snippy and patriotic.
You damn people in Canada. It's your fault because they lump everybody into a group or something. No, blame Canada. No, there you go.
I remember when a lot of socialists and or a lot of lefties were like, if Bush gets a second term, I'm going to move to Canada. And they're just all talk. They're still here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it really is so lame to have to move because of a fucking government. I mean, I don't know. I feel like we're supposed to be opting out of the state, and maybe part of that is going wherever the hell you want and just still living free. And it's just sad that there are some places that it's really hard to do that, you know, like the East Coast or like California. And beautiful places, too. I mean, me and my wife are planning a, you know, a cross-country adventure on our way back to Texas. And we were thinking about going through California. And I'm wondering, you know, am I going to be worrying about how I'm carrying my guns?
I wouldn't, man. I wouldn't. First of all, you can't carry your guns in California.
You can open carry.
No, you can't.
Still
they closed that. You can open carry long guns, but if you open carry a long gun in California, you're going to get a SWAT team kicking you to the ground and taking you to jail until they figure it out.
Well, see, that's why I'm building the back holster, so I can
if you walk around California, no. If you walk around California... No, don't even try it, man. If you walk around California with a shotgun in a back holster, you are going to get thrown to the ground and arrested and beat up and taken to jail until they figure it out.
It'll be good publicity, though. Let's fiend source it. Fiends, do you think I should walk around Cali with my shotgun in a back holster?
Well, anybody who says yes isn't you and isn't going to be the one getting kicked to the ground. Also, here's one thought. Open carry of long guns is technically legal in California, but... in a back holster with only a foot of it showing, they might say that's concealed.
Hmm.
And also, you could get arrested for disturbing the peace or creating a...
I don't know if they can make the concealed argument, because I'm going to make it with so it's going to be black and it's a black shotgun.
Oh, so no one's going to know? They're going to think it's
I'm just saying it's going to be obvious, so it'll look like a shotgun even...
What you're telling me is you want to get arrested in a different state and get your guns taken away forever.
Well, hold up. Here's the other thing.
They will take your guns away forever.
We're going to be in... And isn't there a different...
Guns are allowed now in federal parks if they're carried with laws that are consistent of the state they're in. And you cannot take them in any of the buildings. So you can't go pee. You can't go in the gift shop. You can't go in a coffee shop.
We're going to be camping. We're rough to go into a building to...
All I'm saying, what I'm hearing, is you want to do something and get arrested.
I don't want to get arrested.
I think you'll get arrested, if not get beat out of you, if not get all your guns taken away, probably get all your property you're carrying with you taken away, and be in for a determined period of time, a bunch of legal fees back to.
I don't know. More. I think the truth lies somewhere.
Where I would research is there's a site called opencarry.org. I would go there, and there's a California-specific board. Okay. And I would ask questions on that.
Because the other thing is, we're going to be in... We're not really going to go...
I'm just going to be with you, and I don't really have... You don't really have... I mean, I hate to say, let's... What am I going to say? I'm going to say... You're going to say, no, I'm not. And we're just going to go back and forth on that for an hour. And California cops are like Texas cops, but they're smarter, they're faster, they're better armed, they're more badass. They want to fuck with people, and they obey the law even less than Texas cops.
All right. I didn't say I was going to do anything. I said I... We can end the conversation, but I do ask that you leave it in.
I'm going to leave it in. I'm not going to leave this arguing in.
Okay.
I mean, this is silly, and we're...
FreedomFiends.com 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 FreedomFiends FreedomFiends FreedomFiends.com FreedomFiends.com Freedom Fiends!
People may notice that the sound of my microphone is different.
Yeah? Why is that?
Are you pissed off, Nina?
No, I'm not pissed off.
Okay, okay.
Conflict is the essence of drama, and so that, I think we did a service to our listeners there. Okay.
People are going to be like, if we leave this part in and they don't know all
trouble
the part
in paradise.
Edited, all the part I just edited out, they're going to be like, huh, are the fiends in trouble? Are they going to get a divorce? So I'm using a different microphone. I'm using a ribbon microphone, which is an old-fashioned style of microphone, so I may sound kind of old-timey radio and more deep and sexy and NPR. In a good way, not a bad way. Although NPR uses exclusively, they use RE20 Electro Voice mics, which are dynamic mics like an SM58, you know, like you'd have on stage in any band.
Okay. So they don't have phantom power either, but they don't have a ribbon.
No. Those cost like $500. Right. And they use a lot of compression. I'm not using any compression, although we do use some normalization in post. But no, ribbon mics are a different... There's three basic common kinds of mics. There's ribbon mics, dynamic mics, and condenser mics. Condenser mic is what you're using.
Right.
And the mics in the H2, which I usually use. And now let me cut in the H2 here for a minute. This is the H2 that I usually use, so you can hear the difference. I'm using the H2 now exclusively. This is the sound of the H2, and now I'm back to the ribbon mic.
Much warmer, a little bit more noise, and there's a lot more high end. I feel like there's almost a low frequency cut on the H2, just slightly.
Yeah. There is intentionally, and there's a lot of internal processing in the H2. The H2 uses what's called electrete mics, which are condenser mics that don't require phantom power. They're permanently charged with a static. Electrete mics are what is generally used in lavalier mics for TV.
Right.
Any kind of small mic that needs high fidelity.
Yeah.
Ribbon mics are like the simplest mics there are. Condenser mics basically have a capacitor that's a thin sheet of metal in a large diaphragm, like an inch and a half wide.
Right. And it's usually like gold or something, right?
Right. Gold-plated. Yep. And when you talk, it changes the capacitance. And there's also usually a lot of internal electronics in a condenser mic. If you take them open, there's a circuit board, and sometimes
really?
Even a tube.
I didn't even know that. I figured the tube. I didn't know there would be a circuit board in it.
Well, the newer ones generally don't have a tube. You and I don't own any with tube. Tube microphones, which is what they call tube-powered condenser microphones, cost thousands of dollars generally.
Right.
But then there's ribbon mics, which were actually the first high-fidelity mics there ever were. You know, whenever you see, like, old-timey radio and they have those big kind of rounded things with the wide grills in the front of them that look like the front of an old Cadillac or something, you know, the RCA mics, those are ribbon mics.
Oh, okay.
You know, condenser mics existed in the 20s, but they didn't sound good. They didn't sound good until the 60s. But ribbon mics sounded really good even in the 20s, and old ribbon mics are coveted. You know, if they're still in working condition, they go for thousands of dollars more than they listed for because they have a unique sound. I'm using a $90 Chinese-made Natty RSM4, which I'll put a picture of on the cast. It's a really cool mic for the price. It's probably the best sounding mic you could get for $80 or $90.
Yeah, it sounds good. I'm thinking about getting one myself.
It would be really good for recording guitar or drums. There's a lot of theory about ribbon mics, like, oh, they're really sensitive and you can't bump them, and that's kind of based on how they used to be. They're still kind of sensitive, but not nearly as much as they used to be. They don't have a lot of output. You need a pretty strong preamp with them. Like, I have my mixer all the way up to 10.
I feel like I don't have a problem with that, though. I like playing with a piece of audio after I've recorded it.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, you need a good, strong preamp in your mixer or an external preamp. And you have to be careful about noise. They do have a good bit of noise.
So you hear it more, but it sounds cooler.
Working through the radio, through the air.
There you go.
I was really psyched to get this mic. It was like, I ordered it, and then there was a blizzard in New Jersey where it was shipping from, so it was stuck at FedEx for 2 days extra, and then it was stuck in Colorado because of a blizzard. Yeah. When it finally came, it was like, I was so into wanting to get it that all I'd done is spent time on the internet reading about this mic and ribbon mics, and I went to bed early the night before it arrived, and I got up at like 6 a.m., like 2 hours before DJ did on a Saturday morning, and I got up and I showered and shaved, and DJ said, oh, you showered and shaved for your new microphone's arrival. You wanted to impress it.
You did, yeah. Well, it was a well-traveled microphone at that point. You know, it was a worldly microphone. It'd been through a few blizzards.
Yeah, and I'd argue that they're not that fragile because it'd been bumping around on a FedEx truck for days, and they didn't ring our bell. They left it on the porch, and it was there for 2 hours
in
like 17-degree day.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you were saying in the YouTube mic shootout you did that you can get a bad one. You were saying there's some quality control issues and there can be a rattling.
Yeah, that's why they're so cheap. This mic used to cost $450, but due to Chinese slave labor, it's gone way down.
So it's a gamble, right? That $80, you could get a great sounding mic, or you could get a piece of junk.
Well, basically, it's just the ribbon needs to be tightened, which can't be done at home. It has to be done professionally, which means you'd have to send it back.
I see.
The electronics in these are really simple. It's a magnet, and between it, there's a thin ribbon of metal that's like thinner than a human hair of aluminum. Okay. And
that does sound delicate.
Yeah, and, you know, it's got electricity going through it, and it's got a transformer, and that's it.
Wow. Amazing stuff, man. It's just amazing to me, you know, how far humanity's come, and without any sanction from the state either. I mean, people will take a thin strip of metal and turn it into something that will record your voice. Like, how awesome is that?
Yeah. And here's something about IP that's interesting is the patent on these, on the idea of a ribbon microphone, expired like 5 or 10 years ago. And now
they're so much cheaper.
They're really cheap and they're really good.
Yeah. Exactly. Because, you know, producers were able to take it and run with it and be like, oh, I can create a cheap knockoff or and everything in between from, oh, well, I can create this super fancy one.
Yeah, RCA owned the patent on it, and it's like they had no reason to innovate or make them cheaper because they were they had the only game in town.
Exactly. Monopoly always ruins any market, and IP is basically a government-granted monopoly on something.
Speaking of IP, I need to pee. Let's take a break and save this. Peace.
Since time began, tyrants have taken aim at personal liberties. Now there's a movie that aims back.
The government has no more right to tell us what to put in our bodies than they have to take our guns or tell us what books we can read.
6 drug police were eaten by bears while raiding a marijuana farm.
On your knees, you dirty hippies! Jesus. On your knees!
What's the problem, officer?
Today, many cops who enforce pot laws do so only because it provides them with cushy jobs, good benefits, and a chance to push people around.
I was an undercover narcotics officer. The drug war is nothing but a farce.
The Second Amendment says you gotta keep you and your gat intact.
Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. A film by Michael W. Dean and Nima Vadadi.
DVD available now at gunsandweed.com or on Amazon. That's gunsandweed.com. Makes the perfect gift. Remember, that's gunsandweed.com.
And now, some corporate whoring for one of our favorite products.
Hi, I'm Nima Vadadi from the Freedom Fiends podcast, and I'm excited about Vaporsmith's electronic cigarettes. I dig the taste, and I dig the freedom to vape anywhere the nanny staters would wet their pants if I smoked.
Howdy, I'm Michael Dean of the Freedom Fiends, and I love Vaporsmith's. I smoked 3 packs of tobacco cigarettes a day for decades, but now I'm only using Vaporsmith's. I love the flavors, I don't smell like smoke, and I save money, so I have more to spend on ammo and treats for my kiddies.
Vaporsmith's e-cigs revolutionize nicotine ingestion by bringing it into the 21st century. With Vaporsmith's, you'll enjoy all the invigorating nicotine with none of the nasty smoke. Vaporsmith's are clean, efficient, and tasty. Available in 4 strengths and 10 delicious flavors. Reds, Classics, Turkish, Menthol, Strawberry, Cherry, Vanilla, Coffee, Minty Mint, and Cloves. Go to Vaporsmiths.com. Use coupon code FREEDOMFIEND to get 25% off your order. This is a limited time offer. Vaporsmiths.com is run by a liberty-loving entrepreneur, not some subsidized tax-eater conglomerate. Vaporsmiths at Vaporsmiths.com. Vaporsmiths. I'm enjoying one right now.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Bolin, I wanted to say, I got a little footnote about audio, too. I de-squeaked my house with some gun oil.
Like floorboards, you
No,
mean?
My chair that I sit in when I podcast, it squeaks. And I noticed it when I was editing because I've been pre-editing some of the cast.
Oh, it really bugs me.
Your bugs the shit out of me, editing. Too. Yeah. And it's the thing is, it's so punctual. Like, it happens after every time I'm done with a sentence, you hear a squeak.
Because you lean forward
yep.
or back.
No, I lean back. Yeah, I lean forward up to the mic when I'm spitting, and then I'm like, yeah, that's my point, and then I, like, lean back.
You lean
like
back with a self-satisfied, smug look and cross your arms, like, top that.
Yes, 100%. And so what I did was I took my office chair here, which is my wife's that she's had for years. I took it apart and lubed it up with some gun oil, and it has been, like, squeakless ever since.
Gun oil's interesting stuff. You talking about hops or what brand?
No, it's REM oil. It's a little clear tube with a green label and a yellow cap. And you just open it up and squirt it. So I use hops to clean my guns, but then I use this lube to lube them afterwards.
You know, hops actually has a little bit of oil in it. You don't really need oil if you use hops. I mean, I still use a little bit of it here and there, but, you know, if you're on a desert island or camping or
right.
just forget to buy oil for a season, you'll do fine with hops.
Yeah, I know you will. And I think gun oil is maybe a little bit superfluous sometimes.
Gun oil's synthetic, isn't it?
I believe so. I mean, I could go grab the thing, but I'd have to take my
headphones
off.
You know, there's actually
off.
A sex lube called gun oil.
Nice.
That contains the same kind of silicon polymer liquids that they now use in gun oil for guns in the Middle East, where it's really sandy, where oil gunks things up.
Ah.
So it works on your gun as well as your rifle.
Nice reference and throwback to the last cast.
I know.
All right.
So.
Yeah.
So I want to codify some things here, because I said it wrong last time. I said codify. Or is it codify and I said codify? I don't know.
When you wrote it down, I thought you meant you should be saying codify. And then you put in parentheses, I pronounced it wrong. And I think...
It is codify and I said codify.
It is codify. When I was reading that, I was thinking, you know, short vowels do usually sound better in bigger or fancy words, just because it makes them move faster.
Isn't that a thing they teach you in J school, journalism school, to like,
yeah,
if there's a toss up,
use the short vowel. If it's a bigger word or a word that's more, I guess, fancy, use the short vowel. It moves it quicker, and I don't know, it for some reason it just sounds more like you're in control of your syllables.
It's funny that you and DJ both went to J school, because she'll tell me tidbits like that. Like, I learned that from her. You know, you guys have a bunch of the same useless programming.
Yeah. The thing about college, though, is in linguistics class, I learned that language evolves and you shouldn't fight natural progressions or natural changes. And I think that fits in well with anarchy and believing in self-organizing.
You mean they shouldn't legislate against Ebonics?
That's one point. The other point is... When you say codify, your pronunciation actually tied it back even better to the meaning, I think, than codify.
Yeah.
Exactly. To put into code. It's much better to say codify. I mean, it's not like the NDAA slapped COD all over indefinite detention. You know, they codified it. They didn't slap it with fish.
There you go. Fish. So I wanted to say something about the advantages of being a first adopter fiend sorcerer of the innermost chamber of the fiends.
Enter the 36 chambers of the fiends.
The 36 chambers of the fiends. Yo, RZA.
I'm so glad you got that reference. I was worried you wouldn't get the Wu-Tang there. Good job.
I know a little bit about the hippin' and the hoppin'. It's just a bunch of criminals screaming about their girlfriend's lady parts.
When she p*** it from the b***, you see that in the words of Pimp C.
That's going to come out as beep, 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 beep. So the four people that helped Fiend Source all of the episodes up onto YouTube, we actually let them put ads on them and make money on them. And we didn't say that up front because we didn't want to get people that just wanted to do it for money. We wanted true fiends.
Like a true fiend, yeah?
Yeah. Yep. And once an episode has had ads put on it, when someone else goes to put it up, they'll be able to put it up, but the ads on it will go to the first person who put it up. So there you go.
Good deal. Good deal.
Yep.
Speaking of fiends who've been helping out behind the scenes, Chris C, where are my beats? I'm very excited about getting some beats from a fiend, a fellow fiend.
Chris Calder.
Chris Calder. Yes.
God, something else to say about fiend sourcing. What was it?
That more people should do it.
Yeah, more people should do it. Oh, yeah. Somebody I don't know put a couple chapters of the movie up on YouTube.
Oh, that's right. And they gave it like a different title. The War on Drugs. Why the War on Drugs is a War on People or something like that.
Yeah. And we're fine with that. But I'm like, what were they trying to do with that? Like, get around us or something? Because it's like YouTube recognized all the audio in it and instantly put ads on it that go to MVD that we get money on.
I don't think they were trying to get around us. I think they were...
They thought it was a better title for those sections, yeah.
Exactly. They were trying to drive some other searchers to the content is what I think it was. They were helping us out, if anything.
Yeah, although they did squish the aspect ratio.
That's true, but I don't think they intentionally said, I'm going to go ahead and put up a crappy encode of this. Ha ha ha.
No, you know, I think they did what they could.
Yeah.
It's somebody whose chapter is all about... pot law stuff.
Right. Which is good because I think what he was trying to do from what I've seen was bring it more to the pot side. I feel like so far we've got a lot. I feel like it's a little bit unbalanced. I think we got more gun viewers than pot viewers. What do you think?
I think we're starting to get more pot stuff because it's getting, well, for one thing is there's a lot of pot sites that are kind of automatic aggregators that like when anything comes up that's about pot, it lists it and features it. And then there are non-automatic ones of like people who run blogs that are doing the same thing with it.
Right. And I could see pot users or the pot side being a bit more tech savvy just because I imagine them to be a bit younger and also a bit more reliant on the web. I mean, guns technically, for the most part, are supposed to be completely legal, whereas pot, for the most part, is not. So there's more of a desire to go on the web and seek things out, you know.
Yeah, and there's more of a history of a gun culture that revolves around gun shows. Mm-hmm. You know, for decades, like a lot of people go to gun shows, even when they're not going to buy a gun. They just go to like see their friends and talk to people and hear the latest news.
Yep.
Like before the internet, that was how that worked, and it still works that way.
And it's very insular too. Try being a young reporter at a local TV station and going to a gun show to cover it. And they will look at you with the most suspicious eyes you've ever seen. You have to watch your ass. Even when you're me, even when you're Nima Vadadi and you can talk the talk about how guns are great and government sucks.
Probably because there's a whole bunch of videos on YouTube and on TV now of people going undercover and trying to get a story of, look at these open air hate markets, you know?
Mm.
And they really spin them wrong. Like, they'll find the one guy's table who has nothing but World War II memorabilia, not even any guns. He has stuff of Russian stuff, German stuff, American stuff, pictures, buttons, badges, medals, etc. And they'll just find the one Nazi thing and show it and say, see, these people are Nazis.
Yeah. Completely cherry picking and spinning it how they want to spin it. Which is one of the things I find so unsettling about the mainstream way of doing media and even the way we're taught. I mean, you go out and you shoot like an hour's worth of stuff and people talking and you go ahead and cherry pick it. Basically, you know, you're taught to write your own story. You're not supposed to necessarily really show what other people are saying. You're supposed to use bits here and there that help advance whatever the narrative is. And you got to create that narrative in a minute and 30. And so you can't ever really get this full story from, I think, a general news package.
So speaking of tyranny, I want to talk about Wyoming.
Wow. You got a tyranny today from Wyoming, or is it a tyranny this year?
And now, the Nima News with Nima Vadadi.
And now for your daily dose of nanny statism in our daily segment, Tyranny Today.
Tyranny Today.
It's a tyranny every day. First of all, right before we started broadcasting, or podcatting, I'm sitting in my living room and watching it snow outside and watching one of my cats looking at a squirrel 6 inches away from its nose outside the window eating peanut butter I put out there. It's pretty funny.
All right. So that doesn't seem very tyrannical.
Well, that's the good of Wyoming. Okay. Ah. Wyoming, first of all, there's two bills that I want to talk about. Actually, three. One is it's HB 60 and HB 70. Let me see if I can keep these straight. HB 70 recently failed, and it was a gun ban in courts. And it's a good thing that it failed. And we were really upset last time because on the first pass of it, Gerald Gay voted for it.
Right.
You know, he's our friend that's my state rep, and we helped get him elected. And he's a good guy. I want to separate the hate the player from the hate the game.
Yeah.
It's hard to do, but I'm going to do it. I'm going to say I still like the guy, Gerald Gay. I don't like any politician, and there is a politician part to Gerald Gay.
Or for you Christians, hate the sin, not the sinner.
Or, you know, like they taught me in NA, hate the addiction, not the addict.
There you go. So I think we got all our metaphors covered there.
Yeah. Hate the squirrel, not the cat eating the squirrel.
Hate the squirrel.
I don't know. There's two cats right now. I mean, they're twitching their tails like they're going to attack this thing, and there's a quarter inch of glass between it and them, and the squirrel's just like standing up looking at him like, yeah, what the f*** do you want? Go away. There's glass here. I'm eating.
We need to find a way to repurpose hate the squirrel so we can put it on the glossary.
I like it. Hate the squirrel.
Hate the squirrel.
Hate the nut, not the squirrel.
There you go.
So HB 70 failed, which is a good thing. Because it was a bad law. It was a law that would make sense to anybody on the East or West Coast. It was, they want to be able to ban guns in all public buildings. Mm. But that's the nose under the camel's tent for more gun control. And, you know, that leads to, like, you can't have a gun in a park, even if you have a carry permit.
Not only that, but, I mean, it just seems ridiculous to make a gun-free zone anywhere. Basically, you're saying a pro-criminal zone. When you say a gun-free zone, you say, here's a bunch of helpless victims.
Yeah.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's FreedomFiends.com.
Most courthouses everywhere are gun-free zones because there's so many people that are like angry at the people throwing them in a cage. They'd love to grab a gun and do something about it. You know, right. Grab a gun. I mean, people grab guns off bailiffs in court and shoot people sometimes, but so there really aren't any gun-free zones.
Well, and that's there is no gun-free zones. It's always state monopoly gun zones.
Yeah.
You know, because the bailiffs always have a gun.
So there was this other bill called HB 60, and HB 60 failed. And it was a good law, and it's too bad that it failed. It was basically sort of like the Wyoming Firearms Freedom Act, which was great when it passed, but it has no teeth because it relies on somebody from the state doing something about it. And
exactly.
all of the people who ran to get elected backing it will never back it.
That's another good important point to bring up, because when it came out, people were like, oh, it actually does have teeth. It's the only one in the country with teeth. Yeah. Because it has fines and jail time even for any federal agent that infringes.
It would require the state district attorney and the governor to want to throw a fed in prison for doing his job.
Exactly.
Which ain't gonna happen. Yeah. With anybody in this state.
Which is a good way to prove the point that laws aren't as they're written. Laws are as they're enforced, which they're enforced by people and crooked politicians.
HB 60 could be enforced by any policeman or even probably a citizen's arrest, but definitely by a sheriff or a cop. HB 60 said that any politician, even city council at any level, city or state politician, who passes any gun control law, I think it was gets like a year in prison and a, you know, $75,000 fine,
right,
or something.
Right.
So literally, like, you know, if that was passed and our terribly liberal East Coast carpetbagger city council tried to do it,
they'd all move back to New Jersey.
They would all move back to New Jersey because otherwise they would end up in jail. And this bill failed by two votes, and one of them was Gerald Gay, who abstaining.
Yeah.
And it's a long story of why he abstained. He says he has a valid reason. I say he doesn't. But he and I kind of got into it, not arguing. It was actually very civil in a long, extended bunch of emails.
Right, right. Like a Facebook debate, but over email.
Yeah. Well, I actually feel okay sharing this because technically in Wyoming, anything that you send to a state rep, he has to turn in his emails to the state. Like, there's a record that I had this conversation with him.
Ah,
you know,
nice.
It's I'm contacting my rep and they keep all of that.
That's good. That's good.
They're actually fighting now. Somebody has a bill. They want to make all of those public. And a lot of the reps are fighting against it. I think for good reason, because it would have, like, you know, addresses of people saying, like, I don't know, like whatever people write.
But those can be redacted. I think you could make them public and redact addresses. I don't see any problem with that.
Well, I am going to share this without redaction. I'm going to shorten it because there's, you know, it would take an hour to read all the emails he and I had back and forth. But did we read the original email that
no,
I sent him?
We
no.
have not. We broached the subject last time, but you hadn't talked to Gerald yet.
You said this was the best email that you've ever heard anyone writing a politician that will actually be read.
That will actually be read. Yeah, that was the caveat, because it was great. But then again, I bet there's been a lot of great emails to politicians. The thing is, they probably don't ever read them. Now, we actually know Gerald. You actually know Gerald. He got you a Christmas present. We've been out shooting with him. So he obviously read this.
I've been to his house and he's been to my house. That's my definition of I sort of know somebody.
Yeah, yeah.
And we've been out shooting with him like three times with you and I and him, and like three more times with me and yeah. him. Mm-hmm. So do you have this here? You can play Gerald and I'll play me.
All right. So I'll be Gerald. Okay.
Yep.
Hey, Michael, I went back through my votes and I did vote for that turkey. Surprised myself on that one.
You didn't remember how you voted?
It's because it's already illegal to carry a gun in a courtroom. I became more amenable to the bill when they put in the lockbox provision. You can enter a court building with the gun now, you couldn't before, and they have to give you a lockbox to check your gun while inside the courtroom.
It's amenable, by the way.
Whatever.
Amenable. It makes it sound like less mean. Amenable.
All right.
You improved it.
Amenable.
I said, Wyoming loves to pass bills to outlaw things that are already illegal, like making sure no one with cancer can use medical marijuana, even though it was already decided at the federal level that states have the right to do that. As a person whose only offspring died of cancer, you can imagine how I feel about this. You and I are probably never going to agree, and I like you, so I don't want to get into verbal fights, but I'll reply with how I feel. I think that this kind of maneuvering leads to bad laws. Half measures or tenth measures just add to the bloat of government. Like Nima says,
Santorum tried the same line of argument in the last Republican debate. He said he voted to fund Planned Parenthood because he was able to put an amendment in the bill that also funded abstinence education. It's one of the reasons why government grows so fast and so horrible. A bad bill doesn't go away. Instead, more stuff just gets added to it until enough politicians are happy so it can pass. Partial protection isn't taking a stand. It's not principled.
And that was you as you in my quote, not you as Gerald. You and most politicians do this all day, every day, and not just with gun stuff. Why just piss test welfare recipients? Oh, and there's a bill that Gerald is co-sponsoring right now to piss test welfare recipients. And I said, why not eliminate welfare or at least add piss testing of ranchers getting free money, which is kind of funny because about 3/4 of the legislators in our state are ranchers. They would never pass.
They're welfare recipients.
Yeah. Even if they don't do drugs, they'd be like, mm-hmm. I don't have to piss in a cup. I'm better than everyone else. and why not add piss testing of state reps to show that y'all are pure enough to be judging others? And why'd you abstain from the vote on HB 60? To protect your abatement license? That's not a valid reason to abstain. That's not a true conflict. Mm-hmm. I hold you to a higher standard, not because I believe in the political process. I think it's all a gallery of thieves.
What?
But because... Did you go...
I went, what?
But because I used to think that you were one of the true exceptions to that rule. Really, all that I'm saying to you is silly and moot because it boils down to, why are you acting like such a politician in your job as a politician? Anyway, HB 60 passing would have taken care of a lot of stuff. The Casper City Council would have probably all moved back to New Jersey if it passed. Or I should say they will when it does pass in the next session where it only needs a majority vote.
Michael. As to its constitutionality, I suggest that you check Antonin Scalia's opinion in the Heller case. Page 54 of the opinion specifies that guns will not be allowed in quote-unquote sensitive places, such as schools, bars, government buildings, courtrooms. There is legal, constitutional precedent from the Supreme Court. Sorry, methinks you and Anthony need to do some homework.
First of all, he put the apostrophe in the wrong place in its.
No, he put it in two places. He like got it wrong both ways.
Which I mentioned last week of like people who think they know how to run my life don't know how to do proper punctuation.
Gerald doesn't have the dull eyes, though. He's got sharp eyes. He's got sharp eyes.
Yeah, and Anthony, he thinks I and Anthony need to do some homework. That's Anthony from the Wyoming Gun Owners Association who sponsored the good bill and opposed the bad bill. Now, it came out minutes before we started casting. I started this before and didn't finish the thought. Anthony sent out an email blast that turns out that bill for banning guns in public places that failed was written by the NRA.
What?
That's what he said. He says he has a source on it, and you could go to...
I believe him. Anthony is... He's a real reporter. He's an intrepid guy.
He is.
He goes in and gets his elbows dirty and figures out who the hell is doing what to fuck us over. So I'll believe him on that one.
And Gerald doesn't like him and said something to me about, like, damn bloggers, they don't have any conscience and they just print anything they want. And, like...
They don't have any conscience as they don't have any conscious effort to make the state look good. That's the problem Gerald has with bloggers, maybe.
And most of the state reps hate Anthony because he's getting stuff done and he's, you know, pushing...
Well, he exposes them. Anthony tells the truth. He actually looks into who voted for what and will call you out on your shit.
Yep.
Whereas TV reporters, which there's only two or three, I guess there's a station in Cheyenne that's not really very big, three TV stations in all of Wyoming, all reporters fresh out of college, and all they want to do is go and get a soundbite and go back home so they can edit it and get off early that day.
Yep. And I said, really, Gerald? Quoting a Supreme Court judge on what's right and what's wrong? Are you going to take their final word on truth when a couple of Obama's appointees say there's no private right to gun ownership in the Second Amendment? Because that will happen. And if the Supreme Court votes that Obamacare is constitutional, are you going to agree with them? I won't. I don't trust a bunch of old guys wearing dresses, which is why decisions at the state level like this are so important. And you already pick and choose which you pay attention to, because they already decided, the Supreme Court already decided, that your anti-Sharian bill is unconstitutional even before you proposed it. Personally, I hate Sharia law, but I think if two parties agree to settle a beef on something using Sharia or even Vulcan law from Star Trek, that should be their right. Why should the state government or federal, have a monopoly on arbitration? I think people should be able to settle things with duels if they want. Most things that all politicians do are unconstitutional. The war on drugs is totally unconstitutional, and he's pro-war on drugs. And it builds up a standing army that the founders warned us about of goons who kick down doors of nonviolent people and literally protect no one. The Patriot Act is unconstitutional, and a lot of Republicans voted for it. Obama's new indefinite detention is unconstitutional, and a lot of Republicans voted for it. Public schools are unconstitutional. Property taxes are unconstitutional. I could give about 500 more examples, both from the left and the right, but you get the idea. We're getting to the point where politicians do stuff and it ends up with little kids getting arrested at gunpoint for having a lemonade stand. That's actually been happening lately. The Constitution sets limits, and they're routinely ignored daily at the federal, state, county, and local level. Read the enumerated powers of the Constitution and understand that the 9th and 10th Amendment don't mean that states can pass things that are unconstitutional. They only mean that the feds can't make the states do things that are unconstitutional. Michael.
Hell yeah. No, you totally killed it. Yeah, all I could do there was be the P. Diddy to the Biggie Smalls. I'm just like, hell yeah, that dude knows what the f*** he's talking about.
Let's take a break and then I'll talk about his reply.
All right.
You can subscribe to Freedom Fiends via the RSS link on the top right of any page. It's orange and marked follow. Or you can subscribe via email at the subscribe by email link at the top of the right sidebar on any page. It's a little bit below the search field. You'll need to respond to a one-time confirmation email, but after that, you will only receive an email each time a new episode posts. The Freedom Fiends respect your privacy. We will not spam you and will not sell, rent, or share your email address. And you are free to unsubscribe at any time.
Welcome back, fiends, to Anti-State Theater. Will our hero, Michael W. Dean, convince the statist of the virtues of liberty? Find out in the exciting conclusion.
You know, I saw a really funny picture someone made that's going around Facebook. It's a picture of a guy playing chess with a pigeon.
Yeah.
And it said, arguing with state. Did you see this one?
I did, yeah.
It said, arguing with the average citizen against the state is like playing chess with a pigeon. No matter how good I am at playing chess, the pigeon's just going to knock over the pieces, crap on the board, and strut around like he's victorious.
Ain't that a f***ing statist? Yep, that's so true. They're pigeons. Pigeon heads.
I actually sent it to Gerald. He didn't reply to that, but he did reply to a lot of things. And, you know, they were basically cogent arguments from a statist point of why this has to be done this way and that way.
Right. I'm just doing it for the good of the public,
yeah,
Michael.
Yeah, defending the sausage making. The thing that bugged me the most about it was he said, I mean, look at Ron Paul. He's totally principled, and he's not getting anything done.
He's getting a he's getting a lot done.
He is.
Maybe not as far as bills being passed, but as far as minds being changed.
Yeah.
Man.
And I think that a problem with representatives and people's feeling about representatives, about lawmakers, is they feel that if they don't pass a bunch of laws, they're not doing their job.
Right.
Whereas
right.
we think lawmakers should only pass laws that undo bad laws.
Well, we think it's an intellectual revolution that's going on.
Yeah.
And Ron Paul is, you know, on the front lines, on his steed, leading the charge. In a lot of ways.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe not as much as other people as far as being on the anarchist tip, but as far as bringing the statists from their slumber over to the good side.
Yeah.
I think he's done a tremendous amount of work.
Yep. And Gerald did say, I didn't know you had a kid that died of cancer. I'm really sorry to hear that. And I sent him this back. I haven't heard back yet, but he's in session right now, so he takes a while. I'll probably read what he writes back next week.
He's too busy playing solitaire while he just votes aye or no on it. I remember seeing that when I was as an intern in Austin. I rode around with this girl who was on the Capitol beat. And I remember we went into session once. And on every screen, there was like solitaire or Facebook or some other time killer.
There's a picture, a couple pictures of people in the United States Congress, congressmen, playing solitaire on their laptop.
Yeah.
Okay, so I said, Gerald, here are some pictures of my only child, Amelia. She died of leukemia in 2006 at age 24. She was never a druggie, didn't even drink, was a good student, a great kid, and a Christian. While she was getting chemo and dying of leukemia, she broke the law to smoke pot. It gave her some real comfort from the excruciating pain of leukemia and took the edge off her nausea from the chemo. It gave her some measure of comfort that even prescribed narcotics did not give her. The thought that some bullshit written on paper by some politician could have thrown her in a cage is the reason I'm a marijuana activist, even though I don't smoke pot, and a large part of the reason I distrust all politics in general. Here's something that she wrote shortly before she started smoking pot to feel better. She wrote, "Today is the best I've felt in a very long time, at least a week. I got out on Wednesday, had labs on Thursday, spent all of yesterday on the couch, hideaway bed, throwing up and feeling ill or crying my eyes out because I felt sorry for myself. It's true. I'm scared shitless that I'm going to die. I have another biopsy in 2 days to decide what to do next, if I'm ready for a transplant, if I do another round of Mylotarg and I end up not remembering a lot of it, or if it's just at this point in my life where I just say, fuck it. I'm not really there yet. I get mad at myself for losing faith, but sometimes you can't do anything but live in the moment. I thought I'd been doing that for the last 3 years, but it seems so difficult now. Something about it just, I guess when you're faced with the insecurities of facing your own very real possible life ending, it's easy to get caught up in it. And when I was in the hospital, they gave me oxycodone. I felt like I was a horrible person for needing it, but I can't function without it anymore. I feel like I've somehow slipped through the cracks. Ugh. But today was beautiful, if not a little disappointing. I couldn't find any pants to buy. Apparently, it's not a good idea for me to wear pants that actually fit. You know, chemo does wonders for your figure. I wish I knew why."
Dude, that's like heartbreaking. I can't believe you read that without cracking up, you know.
I cried preparing this and got it over and didn't want to do it on here. Mm-hmm. Probably because it would feel cheesy to me. I mean, to like, oh, let me cry. You know, it seemed like news. Like, you know how news always tries to get the parent of the victim crying?
Yep, I know that. I remember.
Yeah. But it was like, you know, even, and this was about a year before she died. And like shortly after this, she started smoking pot and cut way down on the narcotics that they were forcing on her, giving her, and felt better and felt happier and felt calmer. You know, it helped her. It helped her a lot. And the thought that some f***ing pig politician could go, oh, think of the children. What about my child? You know, what about my child dying and suffering? I don't know. I just, that really just brought home to me what's wrong with politics.
Yeah. Think of Michael W. Dean's child.
And that kind of led to other things. I mean, I still had some statism for a while, but that really made me, at that point, it was more like I just f***ing hated the government and didn't even think about options or politics or personal philosophy or anything. I was just like, that is so wrong. And, you know, I kind of kept it on one thing of that's so wrong that pot's illegal for people that need it. And then a few years later, I got into guns and like, I was like, it's so wrong that I have to lock my shotgun empty in a lockbox in my trunk to go to the shooting range, you know?
Yeah.
And that probably in some way led to, you know, there should be a movie in this world called Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. But, you know, I didn't have all the pieces to make it yet. I didn't have you, which was one of the biggest pieces to make it. And I didn't have the knowledge that you gave me, which enabled us to make it. You know, I wasn't there. I mean, I was a minarchist when we were making that movie and when it was done. You know, it's really like the last 4 or 5 months that I've really gone, nothing good comes from government and everything bad is the government's fault. Which is a slight exaggeration, the second part. You know, everything bad isn't the government's fault, but a lot of it is. There's a lot of unseen hand in what's wrong with the world that governments cause.
Yeah.
And we're not just talking about the United States government or the Wyoming government. It's all governments.
Every government in the world. As horrible as everything was,
I think that initial hate is what people need. They need to realize how wrong these kind of laws are, how wrong the state is in general. When you can really realize that on a personal level, I don't think there's any going back. Then I think it's just a matter of time.
I liked it, that thing that Amelia wrote, that she was talking about, like, buying pants, like doing normal kid stuff or young person stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, that's what she should have been doing. It was worrying about college and buying pants.
Worrying about the human things that make us happy. And laws are not human things. They're anti-human. They prevent us from doing the things we feel like doing.
And then there's laws by lawmakers who think that they're doing something right, but don't quite get it, which leads me to Wyoming lawmaker introduces doomsday bill.
This was hilarious. Yeah, Mother Jones did a write-up on it, and apparently there were folks in the Wyoming legislature that put things in a bill to the effect that we need to have an aircraft carrier in Wyoming.
Well, it was, they wanted to have a plan. They wanted to have a plan B in case society collapses and the feds don't help us.
Which is not bad.
It's not bad, but I don't think the state needs to do it. I know.
Exactly.
And also, even if the state were to do it, there were some real clunkers in this bill. One was an aircraft carrier, which really made the lefties from Mother Jones magazine laugh, because there's no body of water near Wyoming big enough to hold a...
Except Lake Yellowstone, which is in the middle of a f***ing volcano.
I know. which they said, if anything could cause the need for this bill to be put into place, it would be probably that volcano erupting.
Right. It's as likely as anything else. Yeah.
Yeah.
See, here's the thing where I laughed at the lefties, though. They said they want to buy an aircraft carrier, which is a great idea, but... And I'm like... I don't think they were sarcastic when they said buying an aircraft carrier was a great idea.
I think they were.
I think when they think Obama buying an aircraft carrier, they're going to think it's a good idea.
Wyoming doesn't get a lot of press, which is part of why I live here. I have a running joke that it never gets mentioned on TV. And even when they show the national weather on TV, the weather girl's head is always covering Wyoming while she points at the surrounding states and talks about their weather.
She probably doesn't even know that that's Wyoming.
I know.
That's why she doesn't mention it.
The White House doesn't know it's Wyoming. On an Obama campaign or Obama, you know.
They mixed up Wyoming and Colorado on the graphic.
Yeah, which is fine with me. If they can't find me, they can't do much to me. It's harder to oppress something you can't find on a map. But occasionally, the mainstream press, the left coast or right coast mainstream press, finds something about Wyoming and writes a, look at these f***ing brain dead hicks article about it. I mean, there's even one in that show I like, Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip, which is supposed to be like Saturday Night Live behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And there's one where they're rehearsing a joke, and they show them writing the joke, rehearsing the joke, and delivering the joke in the show. So this joke is three times in this one episode, and the joke is based on an actual news item from about 10 years ago, something Cale Case wrote.
Nice.
They say, Wyoming lawmakers have introduced a bill that would allow hunters to carry machine guns for self-defense against bears. Bears reached for comment, said, "Rawr!"
Rawr! All right.
This is brilliant. So
it's a good joke.
My biggest problem with the doomsday bill, first of all, it's the state. Second of all, it's a bunch of half measures, like, or tenth measures. Like, one is that Wyoming should be able to print their own currency in case the dollar fails. Now, I'm all fine with alternative currencies, but why isn't there anything in this bill that says anybody should be able to create their own currency, and if other people accept it, it's okay?
Yeah, exactly. Because they're still statists. Just like when we were talking about Texas last cast, yeah, they might talk about secession every now and then, but they never talk about secession down to the last man.
Right.
They never talk about me being able to secede from the Texas government and say, you know, those warrants, I'm really not going to pay them. You know that sticker you want me to pay $100 for? I don't really think a sticker's worth $100. I'm not going to put that on my car.
It's like, you know, if it was kind of pretty and had some cool graphics in the name of a band I liked, I might pay $5 for it.
Right, right.
I don't want to be forced to pay.
If you gave me a piece and chain with some like blinged out on it, and that was my ID, then yeah, maybe I'd wear it.
So my other big problem with this doomsday bill is that it sets up having a draft for Wyoming, a state draft. Ugh. Like, I want to be Matt Mead's private army, or any politician in Wyoming's private army. Although, the interesting thing is, and they didn't say anything about this in the bill, that kind of is, I believe, the literal idea behind the Second Amendment, is the state militia that could be called up by the state to fight anything from Washington, D.C. to Utah trying to annex us to, you know, probably sovereign citizens within the state. Probably people I'd agree with on most things. But that's why we believe in the right to keep and bear arms as a natural right, not so much the Second Amendment, because
regardless of the Second Amendment, whether it was there or not, we would say the same.
Yeah, the Second Amendment basically says your governor can call you up to fight the feds when they try to legalize marijuana and abortion and gay marriage in your state.
Well, like we say in the movie, the Second Amendment didn't exist when the Patriots fought against the Redcoats.
Yep.
They didn't say, oh, well, you know, check it out, Redcoats, we got the Second Amendment, so that means we can carry guns. No, they just brought guns with them and were like, oh, you're gonna shoot at us? All right, well, pop, pop, pop.
Yep.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends podcast. Freedom Fiends is now available for 24/7 streaming to your iPhone, Android phone, or other chromed robot turd. Click on the streaming audio link on freedomfiends.com. That's FreedomFiends.com.
You ever seen the movie Eddie and the Cruisers?
Nah, man. You watch so many movies, man. I don't know how you do it.
I don't have a 9-to-5 job, and I'm up all night when DJ's asleep.
See, my wife is always wanting me to sleep with her. I'm not complaining, but it does prevent me from doing a lot of things.
I know, and that's what most married couples do, and I'm like, that's so square. And I'm also thinking, like, tell me if you guys still feel that way at 6 years, not at 1 year. I mean, I'm not saying DJ and I have lost the thrill. Not at all. But it's kind of more like, and we do spend a lot of time in the same bed.
You're just better at time management, right?
Maybe. That's but it's also like we're together and awake during the week for about 5 hours. You know, she comes home at 6, and by 11, she's asleep if she wants to get enough sleep. I mean, sometimes she stays up. We call it partying when she stays up past the, you know, we're not doing drugs. We're not dancing. We're just watching movies or eating or something or, you know, listening to whatever. But I'm like, oh, we're partying tonight if she's up at 12:30 at night.
So old, Michael.
Yeah, but we're old. But, you know, it's like sometimes I'm still up in the morning when she's getting up for work. But during the day, I'm usually asleep. And then I get up a few hours before she gets home and I work. And then I work at night and when she's asleep. And it's like, if she insisted that I were in the bed with her while she sleeps, I would be spending 8 hours silently staring at the ceiling going, I need to get on the computer and do stuff.
No, I feel you. And that's why I put my workspace out in another room other than the bedroom.
Right, right.
But at least 3 or 4 nights a week, my wife is like, come to bed. And I'm like, all right.
And that's a good thing. I mean, that's better than a lot of marriages where they're like ignoring each other or hate each other. Yeah. But also, DJ and I were like that a lot for the first couple of years. And at 6 years married and almost 7 years together, it's kind of more like we don't have a fear that we're not going to have time to spend with each other. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of like we've got the rest of our lives. So I think that kind of takes off some of the like, oh, I need you right now. Saying it's, you know, your mileage may vary and it's a good thing. And, you know, I think eventually what will happen is you'll be able to make a living doing something at home, you know, whether it's Fiends or something else you do or something we do together or something or even part time something we do. And then you do, you know, you film weddings in Austin or something on the side.
Right.
You know, because you are Persian and they do love to film their weddings.
They do. How do you know that?
You told me that. I was talking about how bad terrorist Middle Eastern videos are, how bad the audio and video of them is. And you're like, well, that's surprising because, you know, some of those guys are Persian and Persians love to make wedding videos and they do kind of cheesy editing, but it's good. You know, it's well done. You can hear it and see what's going on.
Yeah, it is. The wedding video in Persian culture is really important. That's like one of the things you have to get.
That's funny.
And you got like grandma wear, like star wipes and
I know.
And some nice fast Persian dance music.
But they have like good cameras and good microphones so it sounds and looks okay. And then they put fucking star wipes in it.
They put a lot of work into it.
Page
we'll put it
curls.
That way. Yeah.
That's what I call like grandma wear effects. You know, effects
anywhere,
that no one should ever, ever use, but they do because they're there. And you feel like, well, these things are here. I should use them.
Yeah.
There's a Simpsons where Lisa and Homer are editing a video and Homer keeps putting star wipes into it. And Lisa's like, you know, there are more wipes besides star wipes, Dad. And then that scene star wipes into the next scene.
Yeah. I don't think any wipes should ever be used. I don't think there's any wipe I've ever used.
Eddie and the Cruisers.
Eddie and the Cruisers.
I don't know if you like it or not.
I don't even remember what that is. Oh, movie.
It's
a movie.
It's two movies. It's part one and part two from like 83 and 89. And it's about, you'd probably hate the premise of it. It's about this band, this fictitious band, Eddie and the Cruisers, that's from the 60s that like becomes the biggest band in America. And then the singer drives his Chevy off a cliff. And the body's never found, and they assume he's dead. But he's really alive and living in Montreal and working as a construction worker. The music in it is really good for the style of music it is. That was one of like the selling points of this movie. It was actually this band called the Beaver Brown Band did all the songs for it.
What style of music is it?
It all sounds exactly like Bruce Springsteen.
Okay.
And the band is from the Jersey Shore, and they're a very Springstonian band, which I don't really like Springsteen, and I've actually peed on his lawn of his mansion. But, you know, I hate to say, like, this sounds like it's bashing rich people.
Wait. You can't say that and not explain okay. how you pissed
my
on the
friend Charles
lawn.
Cohen, that was Bomb's roadie and videographer on our European tour, who is my friend, is from New Jersey. His parents are rich New Jersey old. He calls them rich old Jews. He's like an anti-Semitic Jewish guy. He's the guy that got kosher tattooed on his arm.
Nice.
The Jewish word for kosher tattooed on his arm.
All right.
In defiance of, you know, Jews can't get tattoos. It's not kosher.
Yeah. That's actually pretty hilarious.
Yeah. Which is funny because like, when Christians go on and on and on about how homosexuality is an abomination in the Bible, in the same part of Leviticus that says that it's an abomination, it also says it's an abomination to get a tattoo or wear clothes made of mixed fiber fabrics.
Yeah, yeah.
And is as strong in its wording of that. So,
Well, the thing is, Jesus, I thought he like had a whole new covenant, right, with the New Testament. That's supposed to negate all that Leviticus bullshit.
I know.
But they cherry pick the things they hate about society that's in Leviticus, which is like everything in the world.
New covenant. Leviticus. Good use of the lingo, man. I know that one from my 9 months as a born again Christian when I was 15.
So anyway, you pissed on the boss's lawn.
Yeah. I was visiting Charles and his rich Jew parents, as he put it, in whatever town in New Jersey it is. And he's like, Michael, let's go for a walk. And we went about four blocks away and there was this giant mansion about a eighth of a mile away from this fence, and we're looking through the fence, and he said, this is Bruce Springsteen's house. And I was like, cool. And I looked around, there were no cars coming, and I whipped out my dick and I pissed through the gate on the boss's lawn.
All right, you can't start a fire without a spark. You can't piss on Bruce Springsteen.
You can't tell that, you can't start that story without finishing it, because we didn't start the fire.
Yep.
Isn't We Didn't Start the Fire Billy Joel? Or is that Bruce Springsteen? They all sound the same to me.
Yeah, me too.
But actually, Bruce Springsteen's first couple records were f***ing great. And literally, it's like when he was starving. And then when he became a guy who lives in a mansion, his music kind of started to suck. And I really hated his fans more than his music. And the big thing was he wrote that song Born in the USA, and it became an anthem for patriots. And that song is so not patriotic. That song is about homeless vets.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, it's like, I was born in the USA. And
all I can think of is the chorus. I can't think of any.
Yeah,
of the
that's
verses.
All anyone can think of. And all their fans are patriotic Christian Sharia Bible humpers who love that line.
They could play that at like a Rick Santorum campaign or
they
something.
They could. Oh, I think they did at some, and he's an inveterate liberal Democrat, and some Republican actually
he's an
wants,
inveterate statist that needs to shut the fuck up.
Yeah. They actually used, some politician used that song at a campaign, and he got really upset and sent him a letter and said, don't ever use that again.
Nice.
But that song is not about the USA being great. It's about the USA turning its back on veterans.
Right, right. Enslaving people to go shoot people they've never met who make really great sandwiches and soup, and then not giving a shit about them when they
and
come
rugs.
Home.
And rugs. I like the rugs.
Vietnamese make rugs? I didn't know that.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Middle Easterns.
No. No, Vietnam was Vietnam,
I thought you were talking about falafel, man.
No, I was talking about eating a bowl of pho and a banh mi, man.
You're talking about Vietnam vets, yeah.
Yeah.
Tyranny in your neck of the woods got you yowling? Tell the Freedom Fiends about it at talkback@freedomfiends.com.
So, you know, I was thinking, Nima, instead of calling this cast whatever we were going to call it, and you always take me to task for changing the title, but I think we should call this one Pissing on the Boss's Lawn.
I love it. It's a double entendre.
Yeah, it's kind of a metaphor for statism.
Yeah.
And, you know, how many people really have had that life experience of having pissed on Bruce Springsteen's lawn?
I've been a few, but very small number.
Probably some of his guests.
Yeah, I would say more than 100, less than 1,000.
Probably some of his drunken guests.
Totally, yeah.
Yep.
And he's probably pissed on it, you know, enough times for a few people.
Well, I told you that my friend was doing construction in Marin County, north of San Francisco, and he was driving to work at like 5 a.m. on this windy mountain road, one lane wide, and stopped, and in the middle of the road, there was a van, and he couldn't pass it, and there was a guy pissing on his own van, like, you know, hiding and pissing on it. And then the guy finished up, and he goes, "Oh, sorry, man," and he got back in his van and drove off, and it was Neil Young.
Yeah.
Yep.
Wow. I guess when you gotta piss, you gotta piss, man.
So I'll just finish up the Eddie and the Cruisers. It's a kind of good movie for a cheesy Hollywood movie, and it's really kind of fucking dark. And it's kind of has aspects of Rimbo and Jim Morrison in this character that's kind of like
Wait, what's Rimbo?
Rimbo's a poet that was really dark and suicidal and was Jim Morrison's favorite poet. And there's actually a movie, I think it's called Mouth of Darkness or something. I forget what it's called, but it stars Leonardo DiCaprio playing Rimbo, spinning out of control with sex, drugs. And he was basically a rock star about 200 years ago.
Okay, cool.
Yep. All right, so the TSA. I got an email from this guy that was kind of a friend of mine. He was a fan of my band Bomb, and I got a Google alert on my name and looked at the site, and he'd reviewed my band Bomb recently, and Bomb broke up in 93. And I was like, wow, someone reviewed Bomb. And like, I was reading it. Oh, this guy did a really good job, a deep analysis of different records we did and even a demo we did. And then I was like, oh wait, I know this guy. When Bomb did our reunion in 1999, he flew out to see us because he'd always wanted to see us and never seen us. And he flew out from wherever he lived and got a hotel room and bought advance tickets to go see Bomb play this one last show.
Dude, that's got to make you feel good.
It really does. I also got an email from another guy that said that Bomb saved his life this week, which is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. That our music got him through wanting to kill himself.
Good music will do that.
Yeah, he lives in your state and he grew up in the town you live in. I told him to add you on Facebook.
Yeah.
So this guy really loved Bomb, and he went to the show and he couldn't get in because he was 20 and it was a 21 and over club. And I talked the club, you know, I was like, dude, this guy flew here to see this show. Let him in. He won't drink. Let him in. And he got in and he loved it. It was the time of his life. And I didn't really talk to him much after that. I never talked to him again. And I added him on Facebook because I was like, oh, that's that guy's name. Okay. And I added him. And we started chatting. We were getting along really well. And then I was like, you know, where do you live? What do you do? And he's like, when I said, what do you do? He said, I work for the TSA. And I'm like, really? And he's like, yeah, it's cool. My job is filling up old men and taking old ladies' water bottles. And I railed at him. I was like, that is the most uncool job you could have.
Yeah.
You're bragging that you have a job where you molest kids and ugh, you're stealing my taxes to do it. And I just really took him to task on it. And he was like, he backtracked and he's like, I don't feel up the kids and most of the people I work with wouldn't. And I'm trying to get a different job. I needed a job. And that was the key point, was I needed a job and this was available.
Yep,
you know?
Yep.
And it really disgusted me.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's like we say about the draft, you know, we don't have an official draft anymore, but the draft is in essence that the economy is just so horrible. And then they offer above market rates for certain positions like this. I mean, nobody in the free market would pay you that amount of money to fill people up and give you, you know, benefits. And do they get a pension? We should look that up.
Probably.
I would imagine they get some kind of pension.
I think every government job has a pension of some sort.
Yeah. And so people do it and they're just people. And it's really sad. But, you know, I wouldn't do it, I guess.
My son leaves for basic training for the Army in about a month.
Oh, I'm sorry, man.
He's happy.
How do you feel?
Like, I don't want to talk a whole lot on the podcast about my feelings about him joining the Army, but everyone on here knows my feelings about the Army.
Yep, yep.
How do I feel? I feel conflicted. That's the answer.
Okay. We got another email from a listener about his run-in with the TSA. Do you want to read that? Because after that, my wife also had a run-in with the TSA yesterday.
Why don't you read it? I'm going to lean back and use my Vaporsmiths away from the microphone.
Right.
And
he needs his nicotine fix, folks. Yep. All right. So a listener named Preston wrote, I've been listening to y'all for a couple months now, ever since I read about you on Strike the Root. That's Paul Bonneau's website.
Well, it's a website Paul Bonneau writes for.
Ah, well, there you go. It's where you can find Paul Bonneau's writings.
Right.
And you're one of the few freedom-oriented things out there that doesn't make it sound like the whole damn sky is falling.
It's nice.
We try.
Yeah. Having said that, after hearing Nima's story about the cops near the Columbia River, I remembered something that happened to me a few days ago and thought you might find it interesting. I was flying back home from Dulles International in Virginia, and I never had to be pat down before. I always just found a line through security where there was no scanner. No luck here. I was ordered to the side while my friend was pat down first. The guy who pat down my friend came over and asked if I had ever had a pat down. I said no. He described the procedure and asked if I still wanted to do it. I said yes. As he was finishing the pat down, he said, "I don't blame you for not going through that machine. They're not safe."
Wow.
I thought to myself that their safety wasn't really the underlying issue, but I didn't say anything. He told me more about how he remembered when security was a lot simpler and more effective, and how the body scanners are worthless. He was done with the pat-down and looked at me and said, "Listen to me. If they ever ask you why you don't want to do it, don't say a damn thing. Saying that you want to opt out is all you have to say." Then he fist-pounded me. I don't know why he still works for the TSA, but that sure gives me hope. Fist-pounded him. Told him it wasn't safe. So, there are people. The TSA is people, and some of them just need to feed their kids, and they get it. And I guess he found one of those folks.
I mean, it's kind of a slow, gentler version, probably on the slippery slope to true gun-to-the-head tyranny. Throughout history, there have been a lot of cases where basically people did things they really didn't want to do that they felt were immoral to feed their family.
No, it's very true. And it's come to the point to where some of the only money out there that certain people can get is money that's been stolen from the taxpayer.
You know, there are people who believe that, I mean, they blame Obama, but it's more than just Obama, that the current federal government is trying to get to a point where you are going to be starving to the point where you'll gladly turn in all your guns voluntarily for a bowl of soup, you know?
Yep. Yep. Or to where you have to work for the government so that you won't say anything bad about it.
Yeah.
The government would love if the whole economy was government work.
I know. And when you say the government, it's interesting because it is people. But the government, I don't even look at it as people. I look at it as kind of like an amoeba or a cancer, you know, that has a single programming, which is to replicate and control and kind of rises above the fact that it involves people.
Yeah, I think that's one way to look at it. I think the other is, like we were saying on the last cast, it's really a new religion. And it's people who believe so thoroughly in this mythology of the state that are the people that end up writing these laws and enforcing these kinds of things. And the people who end up doing the jobs are just the general congregation who really doesn't know any better or really can't function in society without getting that support from the state / church that is new statism.
So before we talk about Newt Gingrich pretending to be a good person, tell your wife's TSA story.
Right. Well, you know, right after I read this email, my wife had been in Texas visiting. It wasn't a pleasure trip. A member of the family had passed away. And so she was on her way back, and the goddamn government groped my wife. You know, she was flying out of Austin. She noticed right before she was up, you know, to go through the scanner, that the metal detectors were turned off. Which, that's kind of funny, you know. Every time I've been once in an airport where they had the scanners. It was Houston. They had the rapist scan scanners, which is the brand name. I think they mean rapist scan, like it's going to be rapid. But it looks like rapist scan to me. Anyway, she was rolling up there. They didn't even have the metal detector open. You know, it was rapist scan or pat down. And she said she comes up there and a lady pointed her to the body scanner and tried to preempt any objections. She was like, "You know, it's safe. It's not X-ray." And my wife was thinking to herself, "Yeah, like that's what really matters." And, you know, she opted out. And I was proud of her. She said, "Nope, there's no way I'm doing that. You know, whatever else I have to do, I guess go ahead and do it." She said, my wife said, the pat down wasn't really as intrusive as some of the other stories that we've heard, you know, like that blogger who had her labia basically fondled. But my wife said it still felt really horrible. You know, just the fact that they can do that to you. Just the fact that you have no control over it. If you want to fly on the plane, you have to either get sprayed with radiation or touched in your naughty parts.
Go, go, freedom fiends.
Freedom fiends, helping the helpless. Freedom fiends, saving the universe. Freedom fiends, doing the things that I've
taken. Taking the world from the state, fighting the forces of hate.
Freedom fiends, helping the helpless. Freedom fiends, kicking the
So from here on out for the rest of this cast, it's not the ribbon mic, it's the H2 because my computer ran out of batteries. But I did have a backup running.
All right.
And think about like what the state can do that if a person did it. You know, if some guy came up to your wife in a bar and did what the TSA does, you'd punch his lights out or pull a gun on him.
Yeah.
And if he did anything like that at the airport, you'd go to prison.
Yeah, I really would.
Literally prison. You know, there actually was some guy that made a fuss when his wife was getting felt up at the airport and went to jail for it. And
really?
There was a blogger that complained about, that was talking about in detail about the methodology, the technology mm-hmm. they use. And the TSA like came to his house with guns and took his computers.
Ugh. Yeah, and that does not surprise me one bit. And, you know, my wife said she had this overwhelming feeling that the government wants to ground us, you know, wants to make us all reluctant to fly. She said when she told her mom, you know, my mother-in-law about this, she was like, well, that's it. I guess I can't fly anymore. You know, I don't want to go through either of those horrible things.
Really? I don't think that's their goal at all. I think their goal is to make us all think, well, it's okay. It keeps us safe because that will allow us to accept any other bullshit they foist on us. I don't think they want to ground us. I don't think they want to ground us at all.
I think that's a big part of it too. And I think maybe it's, maybe it's a double-pronged approach though, because either you choose not to fly and then you're, think about how important your freedom to travel is to your economic well-being and your personal freedom. I think they want to both limit that and then only let the people that are complete cows through, because those are the people that are safe, they feel are safe to travel around. The other thing is, I think there's a more slippery slope here than, you know, a lot of us have really thought about. I think the next step is definitely to say no, there's no opting out. You know, that seems like the logical progression to me is you either go through the scanner or you don't fly. You know, the FBI will escort some patsy through a pat down who will try to blow up a bomb that's hidden up his ass. And from that point, they'll make us all go through the scanners.
You know, my computer just went black and I can't turn it back on. I don't know what's up.
The TSA is trying to shut us down, man.
I still have the H2 rolling, so let's keep on going. I think it just overheated. When I have it downstairs, I actually have some little blocks under the side of it to keep it from overheating. But so we will just keep going on with the H2. I probably lost the last file, but I can't turn it on. I don't know what's up. But that's why I have like 22 computers. So, you know, actually I have 4 computers, but
computers are like guns. You always want to buy more.
I know people say, why do you have a bunch of guns? I mean, I could see one gun, but it's like, why do you have a bunch of computers? Why do you have a bunch of shoes?
It's funny because my wife came to that analogy as soon as she was asking how many guns I wanted. Because I went to buy a new gun. She was like, well, how many guns do we really need or want? And then she stopped herself and she was like, well, I guess it's like saying if you ask me that about shoes.
She came to that on her own. That's funny.
It's about right, right?
It's great.
But yeah, Newt Gingrich is sinking to a new low and trying to talk like Ron Paul sometimes. In the last Republican debates, if you watch the Ron Paul highlights, there's a part.
I'll embed this video.
Yeah, embed the video and go to about 11:30, I think. Newt Gingrich gets on and he says, you know, the problem is really the force of the state, the coercion of the state. Yeah. And he says, you know, Ron Paul's been thinking about this for a long time, but I think as we progress in the government and know about this stuff, it's really important to think about. And I'm like,
as we progress in the government.
Dude, you're Newt fucking Gingrich.
Yeah. Mr. Coercion of the State.
Yeah. Yeah. He's just trying to do what politicians do and say what people want to hear. I mean, that's the main job of a politician is say enough things that people want to hear so that they'll vote for you.
You know, that kind of goes along with something that I heard on Fox News. I was watching the 2 minutes a day I watch of it the other day. They were talking about GOP strategies and they were saying how the GOP doesn't really have a strong standout Reagan type politician. And what they really want is some kind of like Franken conservative that would have like the Christian conservatism of Santorum and the populist appeal of Romney and the something, something, something of one of the other guys and the popularity with the youth vote of Ron Paul. And I'm like, you don't even talk about any of Ron Paul's policies. They just want his demographic. They don't want any of his crazy beliefs, his damn constitutionalism. They just want his vote, his youth vote.
The thing they don't get is they can't and never will get that youth vote without preaching the freedom of Ron Paul.
There are murmurings now of what the GOP is going to do is put up Romney and then have the vice president be Rand Paul.
Do you think Rand would do it?
I think he would. Yeah. And I don't think it would get many of Ron Paul's voters, though.
I don't think it would either.
Unless they think Romney's going to have a heart attack in his first day in office.
Which they don't. And the thing that Ron Paul voters know is they know that Rand Paul is no Ron Paul.
No.
He's good on quite a few things. You know, he's better than your average politician. But he's nowhere on Ron Paul's level, especially on foreign policy.
Yeah, and the vice president of the United States is kind of a ribbon-cutting office, except if the president lets him be a co-tyrant like Bush let
Cheney.
Cheney, yep, yeah. Yep. But it's up to the president.
Yeah, I don't think there's any way Santorum, Gingrich, or Romney can get those Ron Paul delegates or Ron Paul votes. Maybe I'm being idealistic here, but you know, if I was there as a delegate, which I was an alternate delegate to the Texas State Convention for Ron Paul, I don't think most of us there that were Ron Paul delegates, we wouldn't say, oh, well, yeah, Ron Paul doesn't have enough votes here. We're just going to vote for Romney.
Yeah.
I can't see that happening.
I'm messing with my cables. I'm trying to figure out what happened with the computer. Right. I think what happened is it was running only on batteries and the batteries died. Yeah, because it's starting back up now. So hopefully that file...
You gotta keep them plugged in when you're at home, man.
Well, it was plugged in, but I think I kicked the
power supply out.
The power supply of, you know, the one cable of the power supply that goes into the computer out of the transformer.
I do that so often at work. In like every job I've had where I use a computer, I'm always like barefoot when I'm editing or typing, and my feet just sort of like scroll around on the floor and press things. And sometimes they'll press the off button on the power surge protector. And I'm like, gotta start over again.
How long are we into this second one?
Dude, we're at an hour 32 for the whole cast, so if you got a good note to end it on.
I do. Remember how I said that dogs and wolves are the same species, which is true. The genus is Canis. The species is Lupus. So dogs and wolves are both Canis lupus, but dogs are Canis lupus familiaris, which is the subspecies. And
because DJ's, they've been domesticated. They're familiar.
Yeah, DJ to says that means the wolf that you know.
The wolf that you know.
Yeah. So Yukon is a Canis lupus familiaris. He is the wolf that you know.
He is. Every time I walk outside, all the little kids are like, is that a wolf?
Yep.
What happened to his eye?
Yep.
And I say it fell out because he didn't eat his broccoli.
No, it fell out because he listened to the state. That's what you should tell
kids.
There
you go. Yeah. It fell out because he listened to his public school teachers.
There. You should tell kids that. I like that a lot. All right.
That's my new thing.
You'll probably get arrested for it, but it's okay.
We'll see.
It's free speech, man.
Yeah. Because we all know how important the Bill of Rights is to judges.
All right, man. That's been a really good cast. I dig it. And, yeah, worms.
Peace.
Hello, freedom fiends. It's your boy Dean from the U.S. Get the U.S. out my bloodstream. I owe me and that include endorphins. No one won't ask permission and I won't say please. Freedom fans, one fact that I gotta make clear.
The Freedom Fiends podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license. Do what you want with it and spread it around. Tell two friends. Make copies. Email it to everyone you know. Go on the site and comment. This is a conversation. Every week, we'll have an exciting new episode where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vadadi weave their own unique take on the way the world works and how to find your place in it. Available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Freedom Fiends is proudly syndicated by Alterati.com and the Liberty Radio Network at LRN.FM.
Subscribe and tell two friends.
And remember, the only power they have is the power you allow them.